other two. It's plausible that she might help them to cover up the murder.
Alec had no answer for that. He himself had more than once suspected Daisy of just such a misdeed, and even accused her. In at least one case, he knew full well she had helped a killer to escape. She always had what she considered an excellent reason.
"Yes, I suppose it's plausible,"
he said cautiously.
"I'm skeptical, though, about the ladies being involved in the death."
"I have my doubts," Underwood admitted. "I'm afraid Mr. Perry was on about spinsters going peculiar and getting funny ideas into their heads. I tried to explain they're too young for the change, but he's not convinced."
"Pity. Never mind. When you find out who's dead, you'll doubtless have plenty of suspects on your hands. The same goes if it is in fact the Grey Woman, once you start investigating her background."
"Still, we'll have to look at those three very carefully. Both Miss Chandler and Miss Layton are hiding something, that's for sure. What do you think about this Vaughan fellow, the house agent?"
"Nothing, pending your identifying the victim."
Underwood puffed out his thin cheeks and issued a long sigh through pursed lips.
"That's the first order of business, all right. Mustn't take it for granted it's Mrs. Grey, even if she's the only person who's disappeared."
"With a perfectly good explanation."
"That," said the inspector, sighing again, "is the fly in the ointment. So what will help persuade Superintendent Green?"
"My wife,"
Alec said reluctantly.
"Mention that Daisy's here until..."
He was glad to be interrupted by Pennycook's entrance, bringing their drinks, whiskey for Alec, a pint of mild for Underwood, and a modest half-pint for the detective constable himself.
"Sorry it took so long, sir. After-dinner crush."
He sounded wistful.
"No dinner for us tonight, my boy. We've work to do. They've got scotch eggs and pickled onions at the bar, and potato crisps."
Underwood turned his eyes ceilingward and rolled them.
"Is he under the illusion that he's still a growing lad?"
he demanded rhetorically. The constable's ears reddened.
"All right. I dare say we'll think better with something in our stomachs. Here."
He handed back the change Pennycook had just given him.
"But don't take so long about it. You need to cultivate that air of authority."
"Yes, sir. Thank you, sir." The young man departed at a trot. The inspector shook his head.
"I have high hopes for Pennycook, but sometimes... Where were we?"
"Contemplating Mrs. Grey's proposed travels. Pondering the odds of tracing her to an unknown hotel in Paris, and thence to unknown friends in an unknown part of the Riviera."
"Let's hope it doesn't come to that. Not that I wish her dead."
"Let's hope she has friends we can unearth, to whom she's given details of her plans. If it becomes necessary. How do you propose to go about identifying the body?"
"The char, don't you think? Not necessarily to view the corpse, but she should know something about who her friends were, or are. And she might be able to pin down the date, if we're really lucky."
Alec nodded. It was just the sort of job his retired sergeant had excelled at. D.S. Tom Tring had been at his best with servants, especially female servants, and labourers, and in public bars, in a way that Ernie Piper was unlikely ever to emulate. Ernie was brilliant at organizing information, though, and at remembering details. But unless Alec was officially called in, D.S. Piper would not be coming down to Beaconsfield.
"Going to approach her yourself?"
he asked.
"Unless you think she might succumb to Pennycook's boyish charm."
As Underwood spoke, the constable came in again, bearing two plates. His beetroot-red ears made it plain he had heard. Without a word, he set one plate beside the inspector, then turned to Alec.
"I didn't bring any for you, sir, saying you had dinner. I hope that's right."
"Yes, thanks. That's not a bad idea, Inspector. From everything I've heard, Mrs. Hedger is an awkward customer. Any sign of coercion, and she's liable to dig in her heels. You might do worse than to send in a junior officer. If she doesn't come across, you can always bring in the heavy guns."
Maybe I should have a word first with that niece of hers who works here. Fetch her here, Pennycook."
The constable bolted a bite of Scotch egg and resignedly set down the remainder on his plate.
"Yes, sir."
He tramped out.
"What do you bet she asks Mrs. Fletcher to come with her?"
"I'm sorry. Daisy assures me she doesn't do it, whatever it is, on purpose. It just happens."
"This isn't the first time. That's a relief. I was afraid I was somehow encouraging her."
Alec thought it politic not to point out that Underwood had in fact done so, by letting Daisy stay after he had let Vera go. He very much doubted that either Willie or Isabel would have claimed to be unable to cope without her.
"I do wonder what's making Miss Layton so touchy,"
Alec said.
"We'll find out in due course."
"And very likely it will have nothing to do with your case."
"And digging into it will upset her more." "Can't be helped. It's part of the job."
Pennycook returned sooner than expected, his face as studiedly impassive as the best of detectives, or butlers.
"Miss Hedger, sir, and Mrs. Fletcher."
He held the door open for them. Rising, Alec and Underwood exchanged a glance of resignation and sighed, quietly and simultaneously.
"Thank you for coming, Miss Hedger. We won't keep you from your work for long."
"They can manage without me, sir."
If Sally was perturbed by the summons, she didn't show it.
"The worst's over."
"Do sit down, Mrs. Fletcher."
Uninvited, Daisy dropped into a chair, and Sally followed her example, as did the men.
"I think you ought to know, Inspector," said Daisy, "that Sergeant Harris is in the public bar, busy spreading nasty rumours about what happened at Cherry Trees."
"I heard people repeating what he said,"
Sally confirmed, emphatically.
"It was me that told Mrs. Fletcher."
Underwood jumped up.
"That flaming idiot! I've had trouble with him before. How he made it to Sergeant, I'll never understand. Excuse me a moment."
He strode out.
"Anything else to report, Daisy?"
Alec asked sardonically.
"Not to report, exactly. I wonder whether you and Underwood have seriously considered that the murder might have nothing to do with the house. I mean, someone who happened to have a body to dispose of found out that the house was unoccupied. No, it sounds silly now."
"It's a possibility Underwood and I have discussed, though not in depth."
"Oh, good. Not complete bunkum, then?"
"No. Only local people would know about the house, though, and no one local has been reported missing."
"Blast."
Alec was about to invite her, in no uncertain terms, to remove herself, when Underwood returned.
"He's left already, which means a written report instead of a private dressing down. Along with his failure to view the body, it's inexcusable."
Still standing, he addressed Sally.
"Miss Hedger, I gather you have worked at Cherry Trees."
"Just a bit, sir, on and off like, to help Auntie. Only once for Miss Sutcliffe, but when Mr. and Mrs. Gray lived there."
"I may have to interview you later, but for now, it's your aunt I want to ask about. I've got a few questions to ask her, and I'm told she can be, stubborn.
Pig-headed is what Auntie May is, sir, and she don't hold with gossip, nor with the police, neither.
Do you think she'd be more likely to cooperate with me or with D.C. Pennycook?
Sally laughed. If you're thinking she has a soft spot for a young fella, you're out. I'm not saying she don't mourn my cousin Sammy that was killed in the war, but they fought cat and dog when he was alive. She used to cuff him round the ear when he was a kid, and he gave her a black eye once when he grew. No, the only one she might mind is Mr. Fletcher, because he's a gentleman, and she does have some respect for the quality. Not much mind. I couldn't promise.
Alec didn't dare look at Underwood.
I'm just a copper, like Detective Inspector Underwood.
Well, you talk posh, like Mrs. Fletcher. Don't tell Auntie, she won't know the difference.
Thank you, Miss Hedger, said Underwood. You've been very helpful.
Anything I can do, sir. Nobody, not even Mrs. Gray, deserves to be beaten to death with a poker.
Good gracious, Daisy exclaimed.
Is that what the sergeant's been claiming? Hinting's what he does, madam. And there's other hints worse nor that.
The identity of the victim is not yet known, Underwood informed her. I take it kindly if you were to pass the word.
Then I will, sir. That Mr. Harris ought to be told off good and proper. I hope you'll take him down a peg or two, sir.
As soon as the door closed behind Sally, the inspector remarked,
That young woman has a sensible head on her shoulders. Too bad she stymied my plans.
If you ask me, Daisy said wearily, which I know you do not, I'd wait till tomorrow. Sleep on it. Whoever she is, she's been dead a long time. In the morning, your super, Inspector, and Mr. Crane will sort out Alec's status in the case, and then you'll be able to go full steam ahead, with or without him.
Underwood looked at Alec.
She's got a point.
Once in a while, every now and again, she does hit the nail on the head.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, darling. If you can manage without me, I'm off. Oh, that reminds me. Inspector, don't forget my friends are badly in need of some clothes and papers from the house.
I hadn't forgotten. Pennycook, you go along with Mrs. Fletcher and get the details. Thank you, Mrs. Fletcher.
Alec waited till Daisy and the constable had left before he asked,
You're going to take my wife's suggestion?
It makes sense, and not only because of your position. I've got a couple of men talking to the neighbors. If Mrs. Gray was friendly with any of them, we could have much of the information tonight, and only need to confirm it with Mrs. Hedger tomorrow. Should be easier than trying to dig it out of her.
But she's still your best bet for pinning down the date of death.
Very likely. At least 2 weeks, the doctor said, and probably not more than four. But given the unusual conditions...
They always find an excuse for waffling.
Don't I know it? This time, though, I doubt we'll get anything useful from the autopsy.
Unless Daisy's other suggestion proves true. She was killed elsewhere and dumped in the empty house.
Miss Chandler was the first to propose that theory, I believe.
Lividity will... Except that lividity might not survive the decomposition. I'm not sure about that. The pathologist may even have trouble telling whether the broken neck was the cause of death, or occurred post-mortem.
I hadn't thought of that, Underwood said sheepishly. She could have been poisoned or stabbed or something, and the neck was broken when the murderer chucked the body over the edge.
Underwood sighed.
One way or the other, it's as nasty a business as I've come across in a long time. Believe me, If my super wants to call in the yard, I won't kick against the pricks.
14. Preceding Pennycook along the narrow passages, Daisy considered the state of affairs with satisfaction. Underwood was not bent upon closing the case quickly by pinning the guilt on one or more of her friends, as she had feared. He was open to other solutions, even one that excluded their house as anything worse than a convenient place to dump a body. She wondered to what extent Alec had influenced the inspector. They had taken to each other. So much was clear. If they had not been on friendly terms, Alec would never have teased her in the other man's presence. What was more, he had admitted that she was helpful, even if he had qualified the statement in wholly unnecessary terms. Such an acknowledgement was rare enough to be prized. They found Willie in the residence lounge, glancing through a somewhat tattered copy of the News of the World. She dropped it when they entered. Daisy glanced round the room. The rest of the residents must be at dinner still, or in one of the bars. Where are the others?
Vera decided to go back upstairs. Iz went with her.
D.C. Pennycook has come for your lists of stuff you need for tomorrow. Did they leave theirs with you? Willie produced three lists from a pocket, and Pennycook went off. All right, said Daisy, sitting beside her. What's up with Vera?
That's what Izzy's hoping to find out. Given that Vera's more sensitive than either of us, and a body in the cellar is enough to upset anyone, it doesn't seem to be the murder, per se, that's upsetting her. It seems to be something to do with Cartwright.
The headmaster, right? She wasn't upset about him before the murder.
All we were aware of was that she didn't want to invite the Cartwrights for a drink. She doesn't talk about her troubles much, just stews over things.
So she sees or suspects some connection between Cartwright and the murder? Daisy mused.
So it would appear. Let's hope Iz gets it out of her. She's far more sympathetic and patient than I am. If she fails...
If she fails, the inspector will have to start digging, and he won't be half as sympathetic and patient. He didn't miss much. You can count on it.
And if Isabel succeeds, will Alec listen to her and advise as to whether Underwood needs to be told?
I'm sure he'll listen. If there's anything in it, I'm sure he'll insist on telling the inspector. Alec has no standing.
I should have thought by now the inspector would have asked for his help.
It's not up to Underwood. Didn't I explain the chain of command?
Willie sighed. Don't bother. I can't wait to go to work tomorrow and have something to concentrate on other than murder. Some nice, solid, straightforward numbers. Though,
she didn't pursue the thought.
Daisy did.
Though, there's something going on at work, isn't there? This isn't the first time you've hinted.
I know. I should keep my mouth shut.
I'd tell you if I could, Daisy. Honestly. I'm more concerned about your keeping it from the police. It's nothing to do with them.
Willie sounded unconvinced and unconvincing.
Not yet.
What do you mean?
The sooner they know.
I meant, it's nothing to do with the murder.
Are you certain?
The door was flung open.
Damn it!
Roared the large man in a dinner jacket who appeared on the threshold.
Where's the... Oh, excuse me, ladies. The tapster sent me off on a wild goose chase.
He glared malevolently at the connecting door to the saloon bar.
I see I'm right back where I started. Can either of you, by any chance, direct me to the landlord's private room?
It is complicated, Daisy said sympathetically. You turn... No, perhaps I'd better show you the way.
My dear lady, I wouldn't dream of disturbing you.
But Daisy was already on her feet, ignoring Willie's expression of surprise and doubt. She suspected that the tall, stout gentleman was Underwood's superintendent, and she wasn't about to let him get away without making an effort to hear what he had to say.
That's all right. It's easy to get lost in old buildings like this.
As, looking baffled, he stood aside to let her pass, she asked, "You're here to see Detective Inspector Underwood, Mr.?"
"Parry,"
he said grudgingly.
"Superintendent Parry. I thought you must be. I'm Mrs. Fletcher."
"Fletcher? You're the yard chap's wife? The one who found the body? Those three spin... ladies are your friends?"
he accused her.
"D.I. Underwood has already sorted out all that. Doubtless he'll be writing a report for you, explaining everything he didn't tell you over the telephone."
"Humph."
Daisy decided no response was called for. In fact, as the super appeared to be in a bit of a temper already, she might well make things worse. Whether he was annoyed with Underwood, with Alec, or with Daisy herself, remained to be seen. They reached the den.
"Here you are."
She stepped back to let the superintendent barge in, then sneaked in behind him as the others stood up. Taking a seat in a dark corner, she knew Alec, Underwood, and Pennycook had all spotted her, but as she had hoped, they chose not to draw Parry's attention to her. The inspector introduced Alec.
"How do you do, sir?"
Parry stared at him. Daisy couldn't see his expression, but wasn't surprised when he said in an exasperated voice,
"So you're the man responsible. I suppose you'll want to be responsible for the investigation, too."
"Not at all, sir. I'll have more than enough work waiting for me at the yard tomorrow. Besides, it's a matter for your chief constable and my assistant commissioner."
"The CC will follow my advice."
"I can't say the same for the AC.
"Humph."
"Usually my superintendent would make the decision. However, in the circumstances, I'm certain Mr. Crane will take it to the AC. And even if your CC should ask for the yard's assistance, sir, they could well decide I'm not the right man for the job." "In the circumstances?"
This time his interjection was a thoughtful sound, not irritable.
"Chief Inspector Fletcher has been very helpful already, sir," put in Underwood.
Parry rounded on him.
"But would you want help if it wasn't Fletcher, eh?"
"It depends, sir. As I mentioned on the telephone, there's a chance we may have to ask the yard to request the Surrette's assistance with inquiries in France."
"All right, I'll..."
The door was flung open, and a stranger burst into the room. A man in an overcoat, with salt-and-pepper hair cropped short, and a bristling moustache to match. His hands, one holding his hat, the other a pair of leather gloves, were large, out of proportion to his narrow shoulders. He looked around wildly as Parry swung to face him.
"Who the duh?"
Parry caught sight of Daisy, and scowled at her.
"Who the deuce are you, sir?"
"Cartwright's the name. Whatever she told you about me, it's lies. All lies. She's a..."
"I haven't the slightest idea what you're talking about."
The superintendent pointed at a chair, and Cartwright sank into it. Parry himself sat down at last, Alec and Underwood thankfully following his example. Daisy held her breath, but the three policemen were all too interested in the intruder to remember that she ought to be chucked out. Pennycook, catching her eye, kept his mouth shut.
"Cartwright," said Underwood. "The headmaster."
"You know of this man?"
Parry demanded.
"I've heard the name mentioned, sir."
"In connection with this case?"
The inspector gave his superior a warning glance.
Not exactly. Tangentially, as you might say.
Daisy was delighted with Underwood's unexpected erudition. Her dear friend, D.S. Tom Tring, retired, had an extensive vocabulary, and enjoyed displaying it. She warmed still further to Underwood. Parry turned to Cartwright.
I am superintendent of police. Who do you assume has told us lies about you, and why?
Why might she lie? Or why do I assume she has lied?
The schoolmaster asked, prissily precise.
Either. Both. And why do you think there's a connection with our investigation?
I don't. I...
Agitated, he stood up, dropping a glove.
Clearly, I am mistaken.
So it would appear. Detective Inspector Underwood will send someone to take a statement.
I was mistaken. I have nothing to say that's of interest to the police.
All the same, said Underwood. I'm afraid we can't just drop the subject now you brought it to our attention. I'll need a statement, sir.
Not at the school.
As you prefer, sir. Constable, escort Mr. Cartwright out and get his address and the hours when he can be found at home. That will be all for the moment.
Cartwright practically bolted, forgetting his dropped glove. Pennycook picked it up and hurried after him.
He's got the wind up all right.
Parry nodded with satisfaction.
One of your spinsters is a teacher, isn't she? That'll be who he's talking about, I bet.
They go funny, spinsters.
Daisy opened her mouth to object. Alec and Underwood both glared at her.
Sir, said the inspector, I'd...
What? You're still here, Mrs. Fletcher? Thank you for your help. We won't keep you any longer.
For once, she didn't mind being chased out. She had managed to stay much longer than she expected, and to learn much more than she ought, thanks to Cartwright's intrusion. What was more, her dismissal had been so abrupt, no one had ordered her not to talk about what he'd said. With any luck, by now Vera would have told Isabel her side of the story. Putting the two parts together, they might work out whether it had anything to do with the murder, or at least bring some comfort to Vera, in that whatever had happened troubled him just as much as her. More so, in fact. She hadn't been driven to make wild accusations to the police. The residence lounge was inhabited solely by men. Several stared as Daisy walked through to the parlour to see whether Willie had been driven to take refuge there. She had, and Isabel was with her.
Who was that? Willie asked.
The superintendent, as I guessed.
That's why you were so keen to show him the way. They let you stay in the snug.
I sat down in a corner and stayed quiet as a mouse. Parry forgot me, and Alec and Underwood weren't keen to draw his attention.
Is Parry going to ask Alec to help?
They hadn't really decided when I left.
You were kicked out, Isabel guessed.
Yes, but before that... The most extraordinary thing happened. Cartwright came rushing in, babbling.
Wait a minute, said Willie.
Cartwright. Vera's Cartwright. Her headmaster, yes. He insisted that she was lying about him, which rather baffled the coppers, as had barely been mentioned.
She, being Vera? Isabel asked.
He refused to say, once he understood that no one had been saying anything, true or false, about him. But I'm certain Alec and Underwood assumed it was Vera, and the superintendent was pretty quick on the uptake. Underwood must have told him on the phone about you three. He knew Vera was a teacher, so he put two and two together. By that time, Cartwright had backed down and denied any connection with the case. He departed with as much haste as he had arrived.
He never explained what he was talking about.
No,
but they're going to take a statement from him. Did Vera tell you what he did that started the fuss? Isabel frowned.
Yes. She said I could tell Willie, but she couldn't make up her mind about you, Daisy.
Sorry, she feels she doesn't know you well enough. Never mind. Daisy did her best to repress her bursting curiosity. I understand.
Is, we ought to tell her, not what he did, since Vera's so embarrassed about it, but what Cartwright said afterwards.
Well, all right. He threatened that if she reported what he'd done, he'd easily convince people it was all her fault. Everyone would take his word over hers. She'd be disgraced, and she'd lose her job.
And all three of us would have to leave the district, Willie added. The trouble is, he's right. He's a pillar of the community. We're strangers, and superfluous women. No one would believe her.
Daisy couldn't deny it. However, the situation has changed. I still can't see what it has to do with the murder, but the police are going to dig until they're sure of that. I doubt they can keep it quiet, even if they try. If you ask me, Vera should make a clean breast of it.
That's what I told her, said Isabel.
She refused to go to the police, the inspector, or even your husband. So I persuaded her to go and talk to Mr. Turnbull, the rector. She can't postpone it till tomorrow because of school. She was putting on her hat as I left.
Oh, good. At least someone will know the truth before the rumours start flying.
And someone with plenty of credibility, Willie pointed out.
One would hope so. What's more, it's a church school, for what that's worth. So the rector is probably on the board of governors.
What still baffles me, said Daisy, is why Cartwright assumed the police were investigating his misbehaviour towards Vera. I suppose he walked or drove past cherry trees, fortuitously, or because he's been keeping an eye on her.
He hasn't got a car. Teachers in church primary schools aren't paid at all well. Even the head in such a small school. In fact, before what happened, Vera told me he'd been complaining to her that his wife nags him for wasting his talents for such low pay. One of the things she wants is a car, apparently. He claimed to Vera to be dedicated to teaching. Vera says he's dedicated to power, even if it's just power over a classroom full of children. He's a great knuckle-wrapper, is Cartwright.
If he bullies children, it's not surprising he would bully his subordinate. Daisy returned to her theory. He could have walked past the house. He would have seen the police there. And then he heard they were here, too.
Or vice versa, said Willie.
Or vice versa, Daisy agreed. But was whatever happened with Vera so criminal as to require so large a police presence?
No, said Isabel. I'm certain the police would have taken no action whatsoever if she had reported it.
Guilty conscience, then. And now it's his own fault that it will all come out. It does seem to me, though, that it rules him out as the murderer.
Yes, Willie said sadly. Much as I'd love to see him arrested, he'd hardly have drawn attention to himself, if that were the case.
Unless, said Daisy, it's a deliberate red herring, as Vaughan asking for Mrs. Gray's address may be. Cartwright might hope that bringing attention to the lesser offence will throw them off the track for the greater.
Could it work? Isabel asked.
Unlikely. The police, the CID, that is, see through much more complicated ruses. But he may have a low opinion of the local police.
Not surprising, if he takes Sergeant Harris for an example.
Or Cartwright may just be really, really stupid. Not unintelligent, perhaps, but lacking in common sense. At any rate, having thrust himself into the middle of a murder investigation, he's going to find himself thoroughly investigated. 15. Vera scurried into the parlour. Daisy suspected it had taken a lot of nerve for her to brave the residence lounge on her own. She was dressed for outdoors.
Did Izzy tell you?
I told them you're going to see the vicar, rector, and I told Willie why, but not Daisy.
Oh.
Isn't that what you wanted?
Yes, but...
Vera dithered. But what? Asked Willie, with a hint of impatience.
Daisy, are you C of E?
Yes, at least.
Would you mind awfully coming with me? Izzy's Methodist, and Willie never goes to church.
I hardly ever go, Daisy admitted.
But you're not Mr. Turnbull's parishioner. Willie is.
As Daisy actually wanted to occupy Vera, she stopped raising objections. I'll get my coat. It's very kind of you, Daisy, said Isabel. But are you sure you're not too tired?
Not at all.
Curiosity outweighed weariness every time.
It's just across the street, Vera pointed out. Beyond the church. I'll run up and fetch your coat and hat if you like.
I'll go, Isabel offered, and she hurried out. Taking her cue from Willie, Daisy didn't tell Vera about Cartwright's eruption into the middle of things. It might well change her mind about confiding in the rector. 5 minutes later, Daisy and Vera crossed the road, free of traffic, on a Sunday evening. The grass in the churchyard sparkled with frost, and the church stood silhouetted against the star-filled sky. Daisy started to turn left, towards the old rectory, an ancient building she had noticed on her peregrinations. Vera put a hand on her arm and gave a little tug to the right.
It's this way. The new rectory is to the north. Not that it's very new. Mid-18th century.
Much more comfortable, I expect. Look, there's a light in the church. Could it be the rector?
I doubt it. Not so long after evensong. Probably the sexton clearing up.
What sort of person is the rector? Is he married? A nice, sympathetic clergyman would be an ideal match for Vera, Daisy thought.
He reminds me of my grandfather.
Too bad. In what way?
He looks like him. Grandpapa was a clergyman. They run in the family. But he was also a hard-headed, practical Yorkshireman. He spent all his life as vicar of a poor parish in Bradford, and he was more concerned with alleviating poverty than climbing the church hierarchy. Like my father, he was the kindest man I ever met.
And Mr. Turnbull is kind?
Well, I don't really know, but he looks kind. And he was very nice when he called.
Daisy crossed her fingers for luck. Vera's optimism seemed a bit premature, but at least she had cheered up. A frowning maid opened the door of the rectory and asked their business. Daisy gave their names and asked to see Mr. Turnbull. Grudgingly, the woman invited them to step into the hall, then went away to ask her master if he could see them. Muttering audibly about
people who never give the poor man a moment's peace. Should I offer to come back in the morning, before school?
Vera whispered.
Or after school?
No. Daisy was adamant. Given time to worry, Vera would not easily be brought back up to scratch. Besides, delay would give Cartwright a chance to get his story in first. The maid returned. With a martyred air that Daisy hoped was not a reflection of the rector's. She led them to a pleasant, shabby living room, Daisy with a firm grip on Vera's arm to prevent backtracking. The man who came to meet them was short and plump, with a broad pink face and thick, wavy silver hair. He had changed his clerical black for an ancient blazer with the threadbare crest of a Cambridge college on the pocket.
"My dear Miss Leighton, what can I do for you?"
He turned courteously to Daisy.
"I'm afraid I didn't quite catch your name, Mrs.—"
Vera seemed tongue-tied, so Daisy said, "Fletcher, a friend from London. We're sorry to disturb you so late on a Sunday evening."
"Not at all, not at all."
He beamed at them benevolently, then glanced behind him, where a plump, grey-haired woman was gathering up her knitting.
"My wife."
No hope for Vera then, even if he weren't 30 years too old. Daisy exchanged polite murmurs with Mrs. Turnbull.
"Don't move, dear," said the rector. "I'll take the ladies to my study."
"There's no fire, dear. It will be icy."
"No matter, no matter. They are young and dressed for out of doors. And you know I don't feel the cold."
Vera found her voice.
"Mrs. Fletcher has just recovered." "Come and sit by the fire, Mrs. Fletcher," said Mrs. Turnbull placidly. "I'll make cocoa."
She went out. When they were all seated, the rector asked Vera how he could help her. She looked pleadingly at Daisy, beside her on a sofa. Daisy knew only half the story. Also, she wanted to avoid all mention of the murder, let alone mentioning any link between it and Vera's troubles. She opted for brevity and candor.
"I just happened to be in Beaconsfield for a few days. I'm not really familiar with the situation, but I gather something that happened at the school upset Miss Leighton. She..."
"Indeed."
The rector leaned forward, fixing an intent gaze on Vera.
"I'm sorry to hear it, Miss Leighton, and extremely interested."
Alarmed, Vera faltered.
But I... you already know?"
Had Cartwright spread his version of events? If so, Daisy thought, the fat was in the fire. She could only hope she'd be able to smother the flames.
"The fact is,"
the rector continued, reaching over to pat Vera's hand,
"we have had great difficulty in keeping teachers for the infants. It is some time since any have stayed longer than a single term. Naturally, we, the board and I, suspect a common factor. However, not one of the young women has been willing to speak out, to give any but the vaguest of reasons for resigning. Without facts, we cannot act."
"Go on, Vera," Daisy urged.
"It was last month,"
she began hesitantly.
"A couple of weeks after the beginning of term, before we moved to Beaconsfield. The children had left, and I was tidying the room, preparing lessons for the next day. I was at the blackboard, copying out a poem from When We Were Very Young. Children respond so well to Mr. Milne's verses. They want to learn to read them for themselves."
She fell silent. "My little ones love them," said Daisy. "You were writing one on the board when..."
"When Mr... the headmaster came in. I assumed he wanted to make sure I had everything I needed, to ask if I had any questions or wanted advice, as he had once or twice before. I said hello and went on writing on the board. He came up behind me and put his arms round me, and he...
She shuddered.
"I'd rather not describe."
"No, no, by all means,"
exclaimed the rector.
"I broke away from him and ran to the door. I told him I was going to report his advances. He said I was a typical frigid old maid, and it was no wonder no one had ever loved me. It's not true. I was engaged. It's different when someone you love kisses you, when you want to be kissed.
Her voice cracked.
He didn't come back from the war,
the rector asked gently. Vera nodded. Daisy couldn't speak, a lump rising in her throat, as she relived the moment when she had heard that Michael wasn't ever coming back. She took Vera's hand in hers. As if taking strength from her clasp, Vera went on.
Mr. Cartwright threatened that if I told anyone, he'd say I tried to seduce him and had hysterics when he wouldn't cooperate. He said I'd lose my job and never teach again.
Darling, that's a threat that would only work if he had done it right away. Telling his version now will lead to his having to explain why he let you go on teaching innocent children after your misbehavior. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Turnbull?
Why, yes. I hadn't thought about it in precisely those terms. But yes, I see your point, Mrs. Fletcher. He would be most unwise to come forward now.
Daisy realized it was pointless to try to keep Vera's personal troubles separate from the murder. That seems to be just what he's done.
What? He hasn't come to me?
He went to the police.
Surely this is not a matter for the police.
I doubt it. But the wicked flee when no man pursueth. Daisy was pleased with herself for producing an apt biblical quotation. You've heard about the police investigation in Beaconsfield?
I have heard a doubtless garbled version of something of the sort,
the rector said severely.
More than one, in fact. So one or the other is necessarily inaccurate.
Yes, well, the details are not important just now. As to what brought Mr. Cartwright into the picture, I can only speculate. My theory is that he was passing the house where Miss Layton lives, saw the police there, learned that she was helping with their inquiries, and jumped to the conclusion that she had reported him. At any rate, I witnessed his bursting into the inspector's room, declaring wildly that an unnamed she was lying. When the inspector obviously didn't know what he was talking about, he withdrew his words. And his person.
Good gracious,
the clergyman exclaimed.
Daisy, you didn't tell me.
No, you weren't there when I told the others. And as you'd already made up your mind to report him to Mr. Turnbull, I decided his antics might scare you off.
They might. I'm such a coward.
Some of us, myself included, would be scared stiff to face a classroom full of children. The rector asked,
You say Cartwright's not going to pursue the matter?
The police will. He has no choice. One can't make wild accusations to an officer investigating murder and expect...
Murder? Then that part of the story was true. I didn't want to believe it in our quiet little town.
Daisy was about to speak, but he bowed his head in silent prayer over his clasped hands. She was wondering whether she too ought to pray, and if so, for whom, when he looked up.
What should I do, Mr. Turnbull?
Vera asked desperately.
Sit tight, my dear. Go to school in the morning. Have as little to do with the headmaster as is consonant with courtesy and the necessities of your profession. I'm going to do a little investigating myself. I have the addresses of two of your predecessors who left unexpectedly. I shall write at once and ask them to reveal why they felt unable to stay with us.
It might be better to look them up in person, Daisy suggested, if they are within reach.
They may not care to put the experience on paper. Why should they speak up now, said Vera, when they wouldn't before? Daisy thought fast, because before they would have just put their reputations and careers in danger, but now they'd be helping you, who find yourself in the same position. Or so we can reasonably assume.
You're right, Mrs. Fletcher. One is in Croydon, I believe, and the other also south of London. Surbiton? I'm sure there are buses,
he added vaguely. Oh, Mr. Turnbull, I'm sure writing to them will be enough. I can't ask you to traipse about...
My dear Miss Layton, you are not asking. I'm offering. I keep Mondays as clear as I can, in case anything should come up. Traipsing about, as you put it, will be a pleasant outing.
I'll drive you, Mr. Turnbull, Daisy proposed. I'm going up tomorrow to see my babies. I'll pick you up at Marylebone Station in my car.
That would be most enjoyable, Mrs. Fletcher, if you can spare the time. Let me find my address book and the train timetable.
He toddled off to his fireless study.
It's very sweet of you, Daisy, but don't worry, darling. It shouldn't take long. And besides, I have an ulterior motive. You've probably already realized that my besetting sin is curiosity. I'd like to see your predecessors for myself. Also, they may be willing to tell me what they find embarrassing to spell out to the rector.
I couldn't bring myself to confess to him that I smiled at Mr. Cartwright when he came in.
Why shouldn't you? The previous time he'd come to help you.
Yes, but he probably thought I was encouraging him.
Admittedly, you're particularly attractive when you smile, but if one has to consider every time one feels like smiling that it could inflame the passions of the nearest male, life would become impossible. You mustn't think for a moment that his boorishness was in any way your fault, Vera.
I used to smile a lot more before, I think.
Well, start smiling again. It suits you. As she spoke, a tap on the door preceded Mrs. Turnbull's entrance, with a tray of steaming mugs.
Here we are. Now where's my husband disappeared to?
He went to get his Bradshaws, Mrs. Turnbull. Without comment or questions, the rector's wife, properly discreet in public, though he might tell her everything in private, passed round the cocoa and offered a plate of custard creams. She sat down, saying, I'll leave you in peace when Jeremy comes back.
It's all right, Mrs. Turnbull.
Vera managed to smile at her.
We've just about finished our business.
The rector returned, happily waving a large diary, the larger train timetables, and a map book.
Here we are. Let us plan our travels, Mrs. Fletcher.
While they discussed train times and pored over the maps, Vera talked to Mrs. Turnbull. Daisy didn't hear much of what they said, but to her relief, they appeared to be getting on well together. Daisy and Vera left the rectory half an hour later. Vera walked with a much springier step. Daisy plodded. All she wanted was her bed.
16.
When Alec at last went upstairs, Daisy was already in bed and half asleep.
Darling, have they decided?
She asked drowsily.
Decided what?
Whether they want your invaluable assistance.
They want me, if they can get me. Go back to sleep, love. We'll talk in the morning.
For once, she obeyed orders. When, having donned his pajamas and brushed his teeth, he slipped in beside her, she didn't stir. Alec was tired,
But questions and concerns swirled in his restless mind. First and foremost was the super and the AC's possible reaction to the peculiar predicament he found himself in. He would have to testify at the inquest as a private person. If his superiors decided to accede to Buckinghamshire's request for his services, he might find himself on the stand as a detective officer as well. The coroner would have good reason to be outraged. All Alec could do was employ his persuasive powers to convince Crane and the AC that they must send someone else. Surely the fact that the three most obvious suspects were Daisy's friends would be sufficient. Wilhelmina Chandler, Vera Layton, Isabel Sutcliffe. Suspicion inevitably fell on them. Alec was fairly certain they were not responsible for the woman's death. He didn't think that conclusion was influenced by his undeniable bias in their favour. Years of experience told him anyone was capable of killing, under the right or wrong circumstances. But equally, his experience of judging character made him doubt that any of the three was capable of behaving as she had since the discovery, if burdened by a guilty conscience. Nonetheless, Vera's emotional collapse and Willie's refusal to break a confidence would have to be investigated. As for Cartwright's extraordinary outburst and Vaughan's repeated efforts to trace Mrs. Gray, or to pretend to want to trace her, the two men had moved themselves from the periphery to the center of the case. Tomorrow. No. No point planning for tomorrow until he heard whether he was to be involved or not. He lay listening to Daisy's quiet breathing, thankful that the horrendous labored wheeze had completely disappeared. If he had lost her as he'd lost Joan, it didn't bear thinking of. Holding her close, he fell asleep. When the chambermaid tapped on the bedroom door in the morning, Daisy went on sleeping soundly. Alec washed and dressed quietly, then kissed her goodbye. She smiled, mumbled, and turned over. He went down to breakfast, intending to catch an early up train. As he ate, he changed his mind and decided to drive up. He hoped Daisy would have the sense to stay in Hampstead once she got home, and he had no idea whether he'd be returning to Beaconsfield. He might need the car for a job elsewhere in the country. Daisy didn't get down to breakfast until the last possible moment before they stopped serving. Isabel was in the dining room, dawdling over a cup of coffee. Joining her, she asked, "How is your room working out?" "Not bad. Cramped, but we don't have much stuff. Vera said the truckle bed was quite comfortable. Sally put an extra mattress on it for her. Vera and Willie went to work. Last night, D.C. Pennycook brought us Willie's briefcase and Vera's papers, and our handbags and some clothes, thank goodness. He was no end embarrassed about the clothes. I saw Alec, but just to say good morning before he dashed off. He went up to town. I presume so. I hope the super doesn't hit the ceiling. No other coppers about yet? Not that I've seen. I need to know when they'll let me get the cellar cleaned. I can't stand not having anything to do. They won't object if I go and get some work done in the garden, will they? I doubt it, unless they take it into their heads that another body might have been buried in a flower bed. Daisy, surely they can't... Oh, you're joking, aren't you? I was, but you never know. I do hope Alec comes back, though I was quite impressed with Inspector Underwood. He seems intelligent, especially in comparison with Sergeant Harris. I hope Underwood hasn't left Harris to guard the house. More likely a constable, who won't care two hoots if you work in the garden. It's worth asking anyway, if you're dying for something to do.
The alternative is to go and try to persuade Mrs. Hedger to take on the cellar.
You're pretty certain she won't?
I don't know. She might, if I offer her enough money. One thing's certain, she'll be offended whether